Okay, we're going to start here at the top of Tzayin Mud Aleph, about two lines down. We're going to continue what we were discussing yesterday in terms of Mechubar. Gemara discussed the issue of a Muchni, which was some sort of mechanical wheel that had a knife attached to it. And with that mechanical wheel with the knife attached to it, the person was able to perform a Shechita. So Amar Mar, HaShochet B'Muchni Shechitato K'shera. Over there, and this is what we had quoted yesterday, in that instance, the Shechita was just fine. V'Hatanyo. We have a braita, shkitato psula, that the shkita is no good. Gemara says, lo kasho, that I can explain. Ha bisarno de pachra, ha bisarno de maya. Depends what type of wheel. If we're looking at a potter's wheel, in terms of a potter's wheel, there we assume that it's the koach adam that's doing it. And the potter's wheel, the way that the wheel is turned, is through the input of the individual. That person's input, therefore, is causing the wheel to spin and also causing the shechita to take place. Over there, shechitato k'shera. On the other hand, bisarno de mayo, when we're talking about a mill, a water mill, the driver of the mill or the wheel is the water and not the individual. So in that case, we would say that it's not a good shechita. V'yibaitema. And some want to suggest that the distinction in these braitos is havaha. Bisarna de Maya. We're talking about a water mill in both instances. Velo kasho. And there is no question between the braitot. Ha, bekoach rishon. Ha, bekoach sheni. Depends what part of the water flow is causing the movement of the wheel. Bechi ha de amar Rav Papa. And this is similar to something else that Rav Papa said, and I'll come back to explain what this koach rishon, koach sheni is. Hai man de kafte lechavre. Someone who tied up his friend. Ve'ashkil ale bidko de Maya. And then he pulls away some sort of restraining item that was holding a flow of water back. Umit, and he dies from the removal of that restraint. Chayav. My time. What's the reason he's chayav? Gire didehu. It's as if he shot an arrow. It's his direct involvement that caused the death. The Hani Bey. And that's what causes the death over here. Bahani Mili. This is only true. Bekoch Rishon. In the first movement. Aval Bekoch Sheni. Grama Ba'almahu. But in the secondary koach, then it's a groma ba'almahu. Now this distinction between koach rishon and koach sheni, we've seen before in Sanhedrin on Daf Ayin Zayin, and there we discussed the topic also. Over here we'll take a look at Rashi, and Rashi gives us some definitions over here. And from those definitions we'll try to surmise what it means koach rishon and koach sheni. First of all, Rashi's description of sarno de pachro in terms of a potter's wheel, there he says the adam megalglo, the person himself rotates the wheel. If you're talking about the Sarna de Maya, it's the water, that it's a water mill, the water is what moves it. And then in Rashi, Bekoach Rishon. What does Koach Rishon mean? So Rashi says, first of all, Miyad, Kishinatala Daf, Hame'akevet Amayim. From the moment he pulls away the restraint, the wood that is blocking the water from flowing, V'hitchil the Galgil. And then it begins to spin. U'betchilat Gilgulo. In the first parts of its spinning, Shachat. In the first movement of the wheel, that's when the shechita took place. Bekoach sheni, what's koach sheni? The achar shegilgulu amayim et agalgal paim rishna v'shniya. After the water's already turned it one or two times, then it's called koach sheni. What's very interesting over here is Rashi's giving a quantifiable, almost objective standard here of when it's considered koach rishon, koach sheni. The first two turns, that's koach rishon. After that becomes koach sheni. Rashi seems so exact, but the question is, where did Rashi get this from? Why is that the transition or the threshold when it goes from koach rishon to koach sheni? And we'll see now with the next statement, in Rav Papa's statement, Rashi tries to find it over there. Da'ashka le bidko demayo. And then it says, chayav, dahargo mamash be'otan amayim, because he killed him with that water. Ve'hein hein kli zaino, and that's his weapon, v'lovi groma. Bekoach rishon, what's a koach rishon? Shekashro samoch l'sfat amayim, where he tied him up right by the place where the water comes out. Aval bekoach sheni, Rashi over here said kashro birachok, that he did it far away from the water. So over here Rashi discusses two different issues of koach rishon, koach sheni. And these definitions actually come up with the Rishonim and have nachum minot l'alachot. Rashi talks about one issue of koach rishon and sheni about distance, just purely a distance. Someone who's right up against the water, when you pull the plug on the water, you're chayav, because you're pulling the plug directly flows onto him, and that's called koach rishon. If there's some sort of distance or gap between the individual and the place where you pull the plug, that already is considered koach sheni, because he didn't die from the original release of the water. He only dies later on from the water flowing downhill and then catching up with him. That's in the secondary case. That's the case of our papa. Rashi before that seemed to indicate it has to do with the original hit of the water that causes the wheel to turn one or two times. That's koach rishon. The water that flows afterwards and causes it to turn after that point in time, that's called koach sheni. So according to Rashi, he seems to be talking about two different definitions of koach rishon and sheni. The first one being the immediate impact of the water, one or two turns. Whereas the longer term impact of the water flowing, that's not considered koach rishon, it's called groma. And the same thing over here by the case of Rav Papa, when he's right up against the water, then that's called koach rishon. When he's distanced from the water, that is called koach sheni. Now, for instance, Tosos over here asks, wait a minute, we have, and we know the halacha is with regards to killing somebody, if you tie somebody up in the sun, then they die, you're chayav. On the other hand, if you tie somebody up, and then later on, the sun comes, then you're not chayav. Now, Tosfos says there's a distinction there. When you're mitzamtzim, it has to be where the hezek already began. Now, over here, that sofa maim lavo alav, in the end, the water is going to end up on top of him. So why shouldn't you be chayav? Because it's ishu mishum chitzav, and it should be a problem. So Tosfos says, mikom makom hocha potor, shashe viosham, at the time that he laid the person down, lo yasofa maim lavo, at that moment, the water's not going to come. Ilav the ashka harkach. It's like he took until he takes the plate away afterwards. So it's not immediate. He's not in immediate and imminent danger. Therefore, you're not chayav. And Tosfos compares this to a case of v'doma lezorek chetz v'tris biado. It's like someone shoots an arrow and a person who has a shield in hand. Then he runs over and pulls the shield away after the fact. Over there, you're patur because at the time that you let go of the arrow, there was no possibility that the arrow would hit him. You pull the shield away later on. That's already considered to be groma. At that point in time, that's what Tosfos compares our case to over here. That when you tie the individual up and place him there, at that point in time, he's not in imminent danger. When you pull the plug on the water, and after the fact, that's a groma ba'alma because he's now unable to move. But at the time that you placed him there, he wasn't in imminent danger. Now, if you go back, we went back to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Rama and his parish in Sanhedrin, somewhat disagrees, and he gives his definition. He says that it's not comparable to this case of trees. But rather, he gives a definition of what's called koach rishon and koach sheni. The Rama says that koach rishon is anything that's touching the plate that is holding the water back. The water that touches that plate, that's considered koach rishon. Any water that flows after that is called koach sheni. So these definitions, these machlokot between the rishonim, have nafkuminot, for instance, in terms of electronic issues and electrical issues in halacha. That's both on Shabbos. When you turn a light on Shabbos, you complete a circuit on Shabbos, is that considered to be koach rishon, koach sheni? For instance, making matzah. Matzah that's made by machine-made matzah, when you push the button to start it, is that considered to be lishma? Is that considered to be a maisa adam? Because after you push it once, it continues on by itself. Does that become koach sheni? Does it become groma? Is that good enough in terms of pushing the button? If you do something on Shabbos, you open up a door, something else that you do that allows a secondary item to take place, are you considered chayav in those instances? Is that considered koach rishon or koach sheni? That will be determined by how you define over here koach rishon or koach sheni. Is it have to do with distance? How far away you are from the item? And that's when it's considered rishon or sheni? Or things like the Rama. It has to be touching the object. Here with the water that touches the plate is considered koach rishon. Anything else is considered koach sheni. Or like the other definition we saw in Rashi as well, the first two turns of the wheel are considered koach rishon. After that, it becomes koach sheni. So all these definitions will have impact l'alocha when it comes to inyanei Shabbos, inyanei of electrical and lishma issues, as well as, of course, issues of mita that come about. And these definitions fall out when it's considered to be groma. They really fall out into, I would say, four categories. One is that groma is caused when another object causes it, and that's not just the individual himself that's doing it, but there's another item involved. That's one type of groma. Number two is where an action is taken by the individual and the direct action of the individual does not impact. The other possibility is the delay of the action, which is what we saw here in Rashi, the distance of the individual from the item, or that the possibility that it won't happen for certain. And that's what Tosfos discussed over here, tying up the individual. At that moment, there's no certainty that something will happen. Only afterwards when you pull the plug, and that already is considered to be groma. So those are the definitions or the possibilities of definitions of groma. And they'll be impacted by what we're saying over here, or how we define koach rishon and koach sheni over here. Because koach rishon is considered to be maisa adam, And Koach Sheni is considered to be a Maisa Grama. So now, we continue with the Gemara now. Yatayv Rav Achorei de Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia Kamei de Rabbi. So Rabbi Chia, a Talmud of Rabbi, who is that interim generation that sits between the Tanaim and Amoraim. Chia, the author, one of the authors of the Braitot, sitting in front of Rabbi. And Rav is behind him. V'yativ Rabbi v'ka'amar. And Rabbi says, Minayin l'shchita shehu betalush. How do you know that shchita can only be performed with something that is detached? Meaning that our Gemara before made an assumption that if it's mechubar, that it's no good. Now, the Gemara tried to determine, in terms of mechubar, what is classified as mechubar. Is mechubar something that has to be totally attached? Mi'karo, that was talush of sof l'chibro. But everybody agrees that at some point, mechubar is problematic. And talush is okay. So he says, Shenemar, because it says, by Avram Avinu, vayikach et ha-me'achelet lishchot et vino. So there it says, vayikach et ha-me'achelet. He took a knife. Well, if he took a knife, why didn't he just pick up a rock? Why didn't he just take a sharp reed that was hanging out over there? Why does he specifically take a knife? Must be because you have to do it bitalush. So Amalei Rav l'Rabbi Chia. Rav leaned over to Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia was in front of him. And Rabbi was in front of Rabbi Chia and says, my kamar. What did Rabbi just say? So now there are two ways to understand this. When Rav asks him, wait, what did Rabbi just say? Does that mean that what's the proof that Rabbi brought? I mean, I don't understand the proof. Or the other possibility is that Rav heard Rabbi quote a pasuk, but he didn't know what he was saying. And then Amalei, Rabbi Chia responds to him. Either he's explaining to him what the proof of Rabbi is, or he's saying to him, well, Rabbi brought this pasuk, and this is what he was talking about. But Rabbi Chia disagrees. Normally, Vav dechteva ufta ke'amar. We're talking about here is a Vav that's written on something that is not a smooth surface. If you ever try to write on a surface that's not smooth, then you never get a perfect letter because the letter only hits the pieces or the parts that are protruding, but they never hits the parts that are indented. So that's what he's an expression or using the expression over here, which is that it's like writing a Vav on a bumpy surface. So you can't really see it. And that's what Rabbi Chia is trying to suggest over here. It's not something of substance. Rabbi said it's not of substance, and his proof is not of substance. So Rav responsive for HaKra Kamar. What do you mean it's not of substance? He quoted a pasuk. How can you say that he doesn't have a answer or an explanation of substance? It says, Kra Ziruzuz de Avram Kamashmalan. Chia says, wait, the pasuk is only teaching us that Avram was a Zoriz. He didn't want to depend on the fact that he'll find a sharp rock on there. He wanted to be sure that he had a knife, and so he took it. So that's thinking us about this Rizute de Avram. That's not teaching us that you have to do it, but Talush, that we don't necessarily know. So from that, we can't prove it. Now, this is Reb Chia, the Shriya Tato, which Chia believes that you can Shech to be Mechubar, and therefore he rejects this idea that Rabbi presents over here, and he says that this is just talking about Rizute de Avram. So according to the one way that he explained, that Rabbi was asking him, what was the proof? So he said, it's not a real proof. And he said, well, he quoted a pasuk, and he says, the pasuk's not a proof. The other way we said that Rav didn't hear anything except the pasuk, he said, what did he say? So, again, Rabbi Chia responded to him, he didn't really say anything. What do you mean he didn't say anything? He quoted a pasuk, he must have been saying something. He says, yes, he was talking about talush, but it's not a good proof. Those are two ways to read the Gemara. In both instances, Rabbi Chia rejects the proof that Rabbi's bringing, that it has to be done bit talush. Tosfos over here asks, wait a minute, don't we learn out from here? From Avram Avinu, that Vayikach et Amachelet, from the Gemara in Zvachim, we learned out that that's a requirement that you need a Kli Sharet for Shechita by Kodshim. So that's a din, that pasuk is used by Kodshim. Why over here are you using this for a din by Chulin? And we know that Avram brought an Olah. Then we're talking about Kodshim, not about Chulin. I can bring a proof from here. So Rabbeinu Tam in the Tosvot says you can learn out two different things. Because over here, at this point, it says Vayikach et Amachelet Shchot et Bino. At that point, it wasn't talking about an Olah, it was talking about his son, which is still a din in chulin. So therefore, he says that there are two different things. One is ma'achelet. The din that it says ma'achelet teaches you need a kli and has to, for a kli sharet, to do kitai by kodshim. Vayikach, instead of vayachin, the fact that he took a knife, instead of saying that he prepared a knife, that's teaching you that you have to have talush, even by chulin. So to learn that from different parts of the pasuk, and from the context in which the pasuk is found, we can learn to chulin, not just to kodashim. So now, Amar Rava. Now, this is going to go back. It's kind of a little review on what we did, or a summary of what we've said until now. But Rava is going to say this. Pshitali, it's clear to me that talush ulisov chibro, that if something was detached and then later reattached or re-affixed, le'inyan avodat kochavim havei talush. When it comes to avodah zarah, it's classified as still being detached. The amar mar, because we have a statement, we have a breita. Hamishtachaver lebayit shelo asro. Someone who bows down to his house makes it asur. If you believe something that was detached and then reattached or reaffixed, reimplanted in the ground is considered mechubar, we have a din that we know by avodah zarah. Elohehem al ha'arim, velo ha'arim Elohehem. And when it comes to bowing down to avodah zarah, like mountains, for instance, they can't make the mountains asur, because something that's mechubar does not become asur when you worship it in avodah zarah, because that their gods are on the mountains, but the mountains are not their gods. That's the limud from the pasuk in Dvarim. So based on that, if a house was classified as mechubar, he would not be able to make it into an iser avodah zarah. So the clear implications from this are that a house is not classified as mechubar. And a house is a classic example of talush, something that was detached, and then later reaffixed, reattached, made mechubar to the karka. So he says, Rava says, listen, when it comes to talush, the sof mechubar by avodah zarah, I know the answer. That's a clear answer. Le'inyan hechsher zra'im, when it comes to mayim, lahachshir zra'im, tnahi. That is actually a machloket tanaim. So just as a little background, we know that when it comes to tumah, that any food item requires what we call hechsher lekabel tumah. It must be prepared to accept tumah. That preparation comes from having water or one of the seven mashkim come onto the item. When it comes onto the item, it must be willfully so that it comes onto the item. Now, there are two ways, and the Mishnayot talk about this, there are two ways that it can be willful. It can either be willful in the sense that he wants the water, or he wants the liquid that's there to do something, nothing to do with the food item that he has, but he wants this water to come, he wants this liquid to do something to his benefit, and later on, the fruits fall into it. That can be machshir the kabel tumah. The other possibility is that he doesn't want the water there at first. But when the fruits or the item or the food item falls into the water, that's also makshir the kabel tuma. So his willfulness here has to be either in the beginning of the process where the liquid comes down and he wants it, or it has to be that the food item that drops into it, he wants it. One of those two is sufficient. And that comes out from the pasuk, because the pasuk says v'chiyutan, but it's spelled itain. And there we said that it has to be yutan. The water has to land on there, but it has to be kiitain, as if he did it actively. So the passive water that comes on the fruit has to be, even though it works passively, it has to be in a context of kiitain, that he wants it and that he wills that it be so. So based on that, now we can understand what we're about to see. That's nine. We have a Mishnah. A kofe karala kotel, someone who puts a plate or a bowl on top of a wall, bishvil shetudach, he wants the bowl to be washed or rinsed by the rain that's going to come down. Harizeh b'chiyutan. That is sufficient to make it willful that he wants this water or this liquid. Bishvil shelo yikalakeh hakotel. On the other hand, if he puts the bowl or plate there to protect the wall from the water that's coming, the rain that's coming, ain't b'chiyutan, because there it's clear he doesn't want the water to come down at that point in time. Now, one last qualification over here is that something that is machshir the kabel tumah has to be talush, has to be detached. Obviously, if it's a body of water that's in the ground, like a lake, a river, or so on and so forth, that's not machshir the kabel tumah. It has to be water that is detached from the ground itself, or on an item that is detached from the ground. So now, if it comes down and you want the water there because you want it to wash the bowl, that water can be machshir the kabel tumah. On the other hand, if the bowl or plate's there simply to protect the wall, then you don't want the water. If you don't want the water, then it's not machshir. It can't be machshir the kabel tumah. Where it says hagufa kasha. This Mishnah is internally problematic. Amart, bishvil shetudach. You said that if he wants the water to wash out the plate or the bowl, harizeh b'chiyutan. That's enough, or that satisfies the definition of having a willful and water that comes, he enjoys the benefit of, and that will be makshir the kabel tumah. The implications from that, or the inference from that statement, habishvil shetudach hakotel, if it's going to wash the wall, ain't zeh b'chiyutan. Even though he wants it to wash the wall, nevertheless, that won't qualify as b'chiyutan. Only when it's a kli, or a bowl, a plate, or something that's detached, then is that sufficient to be b'chiyutan. But if it falls on the wall, even though he wants it, and he wants it to wash the wall, that won't be sufficient, because the wall is classified to be mechubar. V'hadar tani, and the latter half of the Mishnah says, B'shvil shelo yilakeh hakotel. If he puts it on there so that the wall will not be damaged, eino b'chuyutan, then that's not classified as being something that he wants, because he clearly doesn't want it. He's clearly making an indication over here that he doesn't want the water. Ha? Shebishvala yudach hakotel. From there you can infer that if he did it to rinse the kotel, harizeh b'chuyutan, then that would work, and that would be sufficient. So you see here that if you're medayik from the reisha, sounds like if the wall is washed by the water and he wants that to happen, that cannot be machshir the kabel tumah. On the other hand, the latter half of the Mishnah seems to be, the inference from there is that if it washes the wall and he wants it, then it will be machshir the kabel tumah. So how do you explain that? You have a diok in one direction from the reisha, a diok in the other direction from the seifa. So Amar Rav Elazar, Tavra, break the Mishnah apart. Mishishanazu, lo shanazu. This Mishnah is actually incorporates two different opinions of Tanaim. And this is exactly their machloket. Their machloket is when you have something that was talush, ulusof mechubar, that's a wall. We're talking about a wall here. We're talking about a man-made wall. We're not talking about the wall of a cave. We're talking about a man-made wall. It's something that was originally detached and now has become affixed to the ground. When it comes to affixed to the ground, that's talush, ulusof mechubar. What's the definition of that? Is that classified as mechubar? If it's classified as mechubar, then it can't provide water to be machshir the kabel tumah. And that'll be the ratio of the Mishnah. The ratio of the Mishnah says it doesn't work. The other hand, if you believe that talush, l'sof mechubar, is not considered mechubar, it's considered talush, then it would be good. Water that falls on there, if you wanted to wash the wall, that would be considered to be good water for machshir the kabel tumah, because you believe it's talush. And that'll be the second half of the Mishnah. The second Mishnah says that if it washes the wall, it's considered talush, and it's considered to be water that's good enough to be machshir the kabel tumah. So here you have a machloket tanaim, based on Rabbi Lazar's opinion, or the way he explains the Mishnah, that'll be a machloket tanaim about talush l'sof mechubar when it comes to hechsher the kabel tumah. What's the din? The Tana Kama, or the first half of the Mishnah, says that it's considered to be mechubar and it's not machshir the kabel tumah. On the other hand, the latter half of the Mishnah, the Tana Batra, and that Mishnah, according to Rabbi Lazar, will believe that talush l'sof mechubar is considered talush and it will be machshir the zrayim. Rav Papa says no. Amar kula chada tanuhu. Rav Papa says no. You can explain this Mishnah according to a single Tana, and the difference is what type of wall are you talking about? Habakotel me'ara, habakotel binyan. Depends on what type of wall. If you're talking about a kotel me'ara, the wall of a cave, the wall of a cave is something that was always mechubar. That's something that's called mechubar mikaro. There, everybody agrees that it won't be water that falls on that. Even if you want it, won't be machshir the kabel tumah. On the other hand, when you have a kotel binyan, when you're talking about something that's a man-made wall, over there, we're going to say that it's considered or classified as being talush. And since it's classified as being talush, therefore water that falls on it, if you want that, will be considered to be machshir the kabel tumah. It'll be good enough to be machshir the kabel tumah. V'hachi kamar. This is the way to read this Mishnah. Hakofig ke'ara l'kotel. Someone who puts a bowl, a plate, on top of the wall, b'shvil she'tudach, in order to rinse out that keli. That's good enough. That water will be qualified to be machshir the kabel tumah. Ha, b'shvil yishudach hakotel, ain't ze b'chiyutan. The inference, as we said before from the first half, is that if it was done to wash the walls, if he wanted it to wash the walls, then if he used the plate or whatever it is to direct it to the wall in order that the wall gets washed by that water, that is not b'chiyutan. That's not considered. Why? Because it's mechubar. Ah, b'med, v'arim amurim, when is that? B'kotel me'ara. That's talking about the wall of a cave, which is mechubar me'ikaro. Aval b'kotel binyan, when you're talking about a wall of a building, wall of a building is something that was talush, lusof mechubar, the wall, then, who ain't deinu b'chiyutan. In that instance, it's not good enough to be machshir the kabel tumah. Ha? The inference that we have from the second half of the Mishnah is b'shvosh yudach hakotel, if you're rinsing the wall in that case, harizeh b'chiyutan, that would be b'chiyutan. So according to the first way we learned, according to the way Rabbi Lazar explained that Mishnah that is two Tanaim, you have a machloket Tanaim by Heksha the Kabel Tumah by Zraim, whether Talush l'sof mechubar is considered mechubar or Talush. According to the way Rav Pop is explaining it, everybody agrees over here. Everybody agrees that Talush l'sof mechubar is classified as Talush when it comes to Heksha the Kabel Tumah or Heksha Zraim. And that would be consistent with what we saw with Avodah Zarah. By Avodah Zarah, we said Talush l'sof mechubar is classified as Talush. And over here also, by Zraim, we're going to say the same thing, that Talush l'sof mechubar is going to be classified as being Talush, according to Rav Papa. Now here comes the question that's relevant to us, which is, by Rava. Rava suggests over here, what's the question? Talush l'sof mechubar l'inyan shchita mai. When it comes to shchita, what is the din? Now the question is, wait a minute, what's his question? We just had a braita. We had a braita on yesterday's daf, then we had a machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Chiya. When it says, Talish Lusof Mechubar, we had a machlok between them. What's the din when it came to Mechubar? Over there we said, Rabbi said that it's posel, and Rabbi Chiya said, or Bidiyevit it was fine. So where do you have a braita that answers that question? What's Rava's question over here? That's what Tosos has right away. Tema, Makami Baile, High Signal El, we have a braita. So what are you going to say now? Ah, Rava didn't know the braita, which is a possibility. I mean that the Amoraim are, we assume they know the Mishnayot. We don't know whether they know the braitot. Mikoma koma korchach yesh lo chiyach mimatniten. You can even learn it out from our own Mishnah. The talush l'sof chibro b'di'evit kasher. Our Mishnah is a case. Has to be a case of talush l'sof mechubar. And over there, it's at least b'di'evit kasher. Maybe even l'chadchilo. So then, who's this question to? The Tosfos says yesh lomar that the question here is daliba de Rabbi mi baile. He's asking the position of Rabbi. The dilma habi k'talush ukshera. How far does Rabbi's position go when it comes to Mechubar? When Rabbi says that Mechubar is problematic, is that only Mechubar Meikaro? Or is Rabbi's position even applied to Talush L'sof Mechubar? Is that classified as being Mechubar as well? Or is that maybe classified as being Talush and B'dievet it'll be okay? So the question is embedded in Rabbi's position itself. Rabbi Chiya we know already. Even Mechubar the Gamre, we know according to Rabbi Chiya is fine. But according to Rabbi, the question will be, how far does he consider something to be Mechubar? Is Mechubar the Gamrei problematic, but Talush L'sof Mechubar might be okay? Or is Mechubar mean Mechubar Mikaro, as well as Talush L'sof Chibro? So that's the question that is being submitted here by Rava when it comes to Shechita. So Tashma, let's go back and we're going to quote now all the Braitot that we brought at the end of yesterday's daf. Hayat Tzur, Yotzei Min HaKotel. You have some protrusion, some sharp rock that is protruding from the wall. Oshaya Kaneh Ole Me'alav. Or you had a reed that grew up by itself. Vishachat bo. And then he used that for shkita. Shkita to psula. The shkita is no good. Hachabai is, you know, it's over there. It sounds like we're talking about something that is talush l'sof mechubar. You're talking about a wall. And a wall could be something that was played man-made wall. So the Gemara answers, Hachabai is, and what are we talking about over here? Bekolta me'ara. Talking about the wall of a cave. How do I know that? Dekanami diktani dumya dekaned olo me'elav. Because the two items that are mentioned over here are items that are going to be similar in terms of a parallel structure. You have a kaneo nele alav, a reed that grows by itself. It's not a man-made object. That is something that happens in nature that's made by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that's bidei shamayim. So to over here, we're talking about a kotel that's bidei shamayim. What's a kotel bidei shamayim? That's a kotel of a me'ara. Well, a kotel me'ara is mechubar mi'karo. Rava says, that's not my question. My question is talosh l'sof mechubar. That braita is not a proof. Now Gemara says, okay, next one. Tashma. Na'at sakin bekotel, embeds the knife into the wall, v'shachat ba, and he uses that for shchita, shchitato k'shera. That shchita is a good shchita. So that's a classic case of talush l'sof mechubar. The knife was at one point detached, and now he's bringing it and be mechaber it to the wall again. So over there you have a case, and we say that shchita is fine. So there's your answer to your question, that talush l'sof mechubar is classified or is called talush. Where it says, shiny sakin delo mevatale. No, that's different. When we talk about something talush l'sof mechubar, that's when the person is mevatalit. He doesn't give significance to the item independent of what it's attached to. When a person builds a wall or a house and affixes it to the ground, he makes it a part of the karka. He makes it a part of the ground. So maybe over there it's considered to be mechubar. Over here, when a person embeds or plants a knife in the wall, that he's not mevatal the knife to the wall. He's not going to leave the knife there permanently. It's not something that he's trying to make a part of the wall. It's something that's a temporary state. And therefore, he's not mevatel the knife to the wall. So maybe over there, that's why it's classified as talush. But in instances where it's something that is there permanently and he's mevatel it, maybe over there would be classified as mechubar. Where it says, all right, next try. Tashma. B'mechubar the karka, shkita tok shira. In that same braita we had that it says, b'mechubar the karka, shkita tok shira. It's attached to the ground, it's good shkita. So the Gemara says, dilma perushe kamefarishla. Maybe that's that braita is explaining. Right, there's two pieces. One is b'mechubar the karka k'shera, and the other one is na'at sakim b'kotel b'shachar b'shkitot k'shera. The Gemara says, you know what? Maybe that's the explanation. The Braita says, mechubar the karka, and what is the definition of mechubar the karka? That's na'at sakim b'kotel b'shachar b'shkitot k'shera. That's the definition of mechubar the karka. My mechubar the karka? Sakin. So that won't answer our question again, because now you're back to that same situation that you had before, which is that we're talking about a knife, and a knife you're not the mevatel. To Rava's query, we have no answer in terms of talush l'sof mechubar b'shchita. What is the din? Is the din that it's classified, or it's just like talush? Or is the din that it's like a din of mechubar? And over here, we brought a number of braitot, but in each case, we had a way to answer up the braitot that makes it that we don't have an answer for that question. What is the din by Talosh Tzubachuber by Shchita? Now the Gemara is going to want to sidebar and discuss this idea of embedding a knife, planting a knife in the wall. Amamar Nat Sakin Bakoto Vashachaba Shchita Tok Sheira. So on that statement, Amar Rav Anan Amar Shmuel Lo Shonu Elosh Sakin Lamalo Vitzavar Behema Lamata. That only works if the knife is above and the animal's neck is below. I mean, you flip the animal over and you shecht it. Even if you have to lift the animal up to do the shechita, over there, we're okay with that. On the other hand, if you lift the animal above the knife and the edge of the knife, the blade of the knife is facing upward, and then you shecht the animal, chayshinan shemi yidros. Over there, we worry about the fact that you have pressure. Think about this. If you have a heavy animal, you're lifting up above the knife, and then you have to bring him back and forth. Because the knife doesn't move, you have to move the behemoth back and forth. What are you afraid of? The weight of the animal will press on the knife, and that'll call drisa. It won't be simply a back and forth motion, it'll also be pressure downward, and that's possible by shechita. On the other hand, when it's the other way around, where the blade of the knife is facing downward, and you flip the animal over and you do the shechita, there you're lifting the animal up. There it's unlikely that you're doing drisa because you have the pressure, the weight of the animal going against you. So the likelihood is that the back and forth motion is what causes the shechita over there. That's the qualification that's brought by Rav Anan in the name of Shmuel. The problem is obvious. Yesterday, daf, we had a brayta that was explicit. It didn't matter. We had a brayta that said it doesn't matter if it's on top or on the bottom, it's fine. And here we have an amora saying the opposite. V'haktani, ben shesakin lamata, v'tzavar behem alamala, ben shesakin lamala, v'tzavar behem alamata. We have a brayta that says, no problem, either way, up, whether it's above or below. Zamar avdid, litztadim ktani. That brayta is speaking, you have to define the case. Sakin lamata, if the knife is below, v'tzavar behem alamala, and the neck of the behem is above, bitalush, then it works if it's talush. Meaning that if you're holding the knife and you're moving the knife and back, that's fine. If the animal's above and you're moving the knife, we don't worry about drisa in that case. Then sakin lamalo. On the other hand, if the knife's above and it's avar beim lamata ben b'chubar, then even if it's attached to the wall, it works. So that's the first way to explain the brayta that won't be a stira to this Rav Anan and Amar Shmuel, is that you have to know what we're talking about here. The knife being above and below is not just simply a case where it's affixed to the wall. When it's detached, then you can do it from below going upward. But when it's attached, you can only do it with the animal coming from below, but not from above, because we're worried about the drisa. Rav Vapa Amar, I'll solve the problem for you, that the brayta is talking about a case of ba'ofa de kalil. It's talking about a bird. Now, there's a big difference between a bird and an animal. What are we worried about here? We're worried about the weight of the animal pressing on the knife and causing drisa when you lift it up above. When you're talking about a bird is very light. So by a bird, it won't matter whether you do the shechita, the blade is facing upward, and you do the shechita of the moving the bird from above, or you do it the other way, and the blade's facing down, and you move the bird up. In both those instances, we're not worried about drisa, because the weight of the bird is not going to cause drisa over here. When it comes to an animal, that's where the qualification of Rav Anan and Shmuel comes in. So when it comes to a bird, that's what the brayta was discussing. When it comes to Rav Anan and Shmuel, they were discussing an animal that weighs a lot. Then if you're below the blade and you're lifting it up, then we're fine. On the other hand, when you bring it above the blade, then we're worried about drisa because of the weight of the animal is going to cause it to press down on the knife, and there we're worried about it. Amar Rav Chista Rami Yitzchak, Varmi Lo B'matnita. Rav Chista says the name of Rav Yitzchak, some people say that it was in a braita. Tano, Hayid Devarim Nemru B'Krumit Shel Kaneh. Krumit Shel Kaneh was mentioned that you're allowed to do shechita with. In the Gemara, we brought down a braita that says B'chol Shochatin, and in that case, we said B'chol Shochatin was one of the items that you're allowed to do was B'Krumit Shel Kaneh, which is the reed or the reed halm. So ben betzur, ben mezchuti, ben bekrumit shel kaneh. So that you're allowed to use a krumit shel kaneh. Now Gemara says we have five things that are said about krumit shel kaneh. Number one, ain't shochatim ba, can't do shkita with it. So the question is obvious already. We had the brayta yesterday says you can do shkita with it. Now we have a brayta or Rav Chista Rami Yitzchak saying you can't do shkita with it. Ain't malin ba, you can't do a brit mila with it. Ve'ain mechatkin ba basar, you can't cut meat with it. Ve'ain mechatzitzim ba sinayim, you can't use it as a toothpick to clean out your teeth. Ve'ein mekanchin ba, and you can't use it as toilet paper. Mar says, ain't shochatin ba. What do you mean you can't do shkita with it? V'hatanyo. We have an explicit braita. B'chol shochatin, you're allowed to shech with anything. Ben betzur, ben mezchukit, ben mekrumit shel kaneh, you're allowed to shech with any of these items. Zamar papa b'simona da'agmo. We're talking about a very specific type of kaneh. That specific type of kaneh is hard and sharp. Now, what is the problem over here? This is what I have to explain. The problem that we're worried about with this kaneh and this reed is that the reed has sharp points on it that splinter off when you use it. So the problem by shechita is that we're afraid if you use these reeds that have this hardened wood, but that splinters, then when you're doing the motion for shechita, it's actually going to cause puncturing in the simanim or rip the simanim out. It won't act like a knife because of the splintering. That's the same problem by the milah. We're worried if you use it for a milah, that it's going to catch the gid, and it's going to cause major damage to the baby. So we don't want you to use this kumit shilkaneh. Same is true, why can't you cut meat with it? Because we're afraid the splinters are going to get left in the meat when you cut the meat. And then person's going to eat the meat. They won't see that. And they're going to be swallowing. It's like swallowing bones. You know, it's going to be something sharp inside the meat. And then Eim Chatzimah Shinaim is a danger. We don't want you using it as a toothpick because we're afraid it's going to splinter in your mouth. And Eim Kanchin, but obviously you can't use it as toilet paper because we're afraid for the same reason that it's going to cause damage to this person if he uses it as toilet paper. So Rapapa comes along and says, that's all true when you're talking about normal Krumit Shilkaneh. But when you're talking about the Simono de Agma, which is this very hard reed that doesn't splinter at all, over there you overcome that problem, and the Simono de Agma can be used in these instances. So Gemara says, "V'ein mechatchin ba'basar." Is it really true that you're not allowed to cut meat with it? Rapapa mechatech ba'kirvei dagim. So he says, "The Ziga." I don't know if it's really a question or more of a statement, which is Rapapa used to cut the fish because the Ziga. Zag in the Gemara means glass. So what is Ziga? Ziga means that it's transparent. When it comes to a fish, the transparency of the fish or the meat of the fish makes it that you'll see where the splinters are, as opposed to the meat of an animal, where you won't be able to see that the splinters are embedded in there. What's very nice is if you look in the Rashi over here about Zige, he says that they are the laws that he used. The laws that he explains over there is Zig, clear, belaz. So in case you had any doubts about it, that's what it means. Zige, glass, or clear, or transparent, that's what it means, clear over here. And he says, Ke'ein Marat, just like a mirror, Shikoring Mirdvir. We could call a mirror. So anyway, here's one of the times that the old French matches up with the English. So you can see that Rashi is clearly saying that the zag here, or the glass that we're talking about, means that it's clear and you can see the splintering, so we don't worry about it. So by fish, we don't worry about it. On the other hand, when it comes to animals, we do worry about it. Rabbi Rav Huna Mechatech Ba'ofa, that he used to cut bird or meat or fowl with it, the grokich, because they were softer meat. So since it's softer meat, the splinters don't get caught in the meat because the meat is soft. Why over here do we say you're not allowed to use it for toilet paper because of the splintering issue? Typically, mishum damamar, we have another reason that you shouldn't use it. If you use as toilet paper something that is flammable, shinav noshrot, it causes some sort of tearing of the anal ligaments, causes some problems down below. So that should be a problem. So when it says, I'm a papa, Kinuach pimakek, I mean, we're not talking about here, talking about using it for toilet paper. We're talking about here using it to rub off or to rub against some sort of injury that you have and you want to clear off the injury or clean up that area. That's what they're using the kaneh for over here. We're not talking about toilet paper, which has a separate issue of using the kaneh, which is that or shaletet bow, that it's flammable. That would be an issue even without the splintering. But the splintering we're worried about if you try to clear off a makeh. Now we're going back to the Mishnah. You remember in the Mishnah made some generic statements, which is Hakol Shochatin, Uli Olam Shochatim. So the Gemara wants to know, what does that mean? Hakol Shochatin, what does it mean that everybody does Shechita? Hakol B'Shechita. Doesn't mean that anybody could do Shechita, but rather that everything requires Shechita. Vafilu Of. Even birds, even fowl require Shechita. The Olam Shochatin. What does it mean that you can always do Shechita, or you always have to do? Mantano. Who's the author of our Mishnah? It's Amar Rabbo Rabbi Shmolhi. Rabbi says that the author of our mission is Rabbi Shmuel, the Tanya, because you have a brighter. Ki yarchiv Hashem lekechet gulcha kasher diber lach. When Hashem expands your boundaries and then you want to eat. V'amarta uchla basar. When you say that I want to eat meat. This is what's called basar tava. I want to eat meat, but I'm not going to bring a korban. I'm not going to bring it up to the mikdash. Rabbi Shmuel omer, lo bakatuv lahater lehem basar tava. This is the first time that they were able to eat meat that was chulin. Shebetchilo, in the beginning, nesar lehem basar tava. When they were in the midbar, they were asur from eating meat that was chulin. They had to, anytime they wanted to eat meat, they had to bring a korban in the mishkan. The mishkan was right there. They brought a korban and then they ate the meat.
Where we learn this isur out is actually subject to a machlok between Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi claims over here that the isur is derived from the fact that it says, Vel petach umoed lo hevyo. It's actually talking about shchutei chutz. And over there he says that there was a requirement when you were in the midbar that you had to bring it to petach umoed. Only korbanot, no chulin. Tosafot says, I don't understand. You're quoting me a pasuk from Shchut Echutz. What does that have to do with what they ate in the Midbar? Rather, Tosafot says, the fact that you need a heter for Basar Tavad, the parsha that's found in Parshat Devarim, indicates that there must have been an Isur prior to that point in time. The fact that the parsha comes specifically Matir, Chulin, means that Chulin must have been Asur until that point in time. But this was the first time this pasuk or this parsha in Devarim is teaching us that when they enter into the land of Israel and they're going to be spread out amongst the whole land and it's going to be too hard to come to Mikdash every day, that there's an ability to eat meat that is Chulin. That's what it comes to teach us. So, now that we were put back into Galut, I would think maybe it goes back to the original Isur, like it was in the Midbar. That's what the Mishnah comes to teach us. The Olam Shochatin, that the Shechita remains forever. Once Shechita is put into force and you can have Chulin and Shechtet, that remains in place forever. Rav Yosef says, what do you mean? Hailo Olam Shochatin, what do you mean that you always can do Shechita? That's not what the issue here is. The Olam Shochatin Vochlin. The real issue is, can you eat this meat? We're not worried about the shechita. We're worried about the ability to eat this such meat that's chulin. So the terminology or the focus of the statement of the Mishnah is wrong. It's focused on shechita. That's not the real issue here. The issue here is really the achila. And there it says shochatin. Ve'ochlin should have said. Ve'od an additional. Mi kara mai taima itzar. Why were they asur to eat basar chulin in the midbar? Shum tahava mekarvi l'mishkan. Because everybody lived proximate to the Mishkan, so therefore they could do Shechita anytime, bring it in, have kodshim, and eat meat. Well, so, my time, Ishtaru. What was the reason that they were mutter when they entered into Eretz Yisrael? To have a mirach came a Mishkan. I mean, not the Mishkan necessarily, but even the Migdash, they were far away, and they couldn't bring a korban every time they wanted to eat meat. So that's why Chulin was mutter. But Koshkein Chashto, nowadays, when we're in Galut, what would be their havamina that you would turn it back, the clock back, to being in the Midbar? Over now, we have a worse situation. Of course we can't bring korbanot now. You can't bring korbanot now because we're not close at all. And certainly it should be mutar. So, Ella, Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says Rabbi Shmuel can't be the author of Mishnah. That can't be the explanation of why it says Akol, the Olam Shochatin in the Mishnah. Ella, Rav Yosef says the author of Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva. He, the Tanya, we have a bright Akir Chakmim Chamakom Ashiv Charshim Lakechla Shemo Sham, Zavach, the Mibachar Mitzonecha. Rabbi Akiva, Omer, Lo Bakatuv, Elo Lesur Lehem Basar Nechira. This is the first time that they had an Easter of Basar Nechira. What Rabbi Akiva is saying is that Chulin was mutar in the Midbar. What was the difference between Chulin in the Midbar and when they came into Eretz Yisrael? That until then, in the Midbar, they didn't have to do Shechita. They just had to kill the animal. They could kill it any way they wanted. That when they were in the Midbar, they could eat meat even without Shechita. I mean, it had to be killed, but it didn't have, wasn't Shechita. On the other hand, Vachshav. But now, once they went into Eretz Yisrael, and Mishkanishul Aretz, Nemelayim Basar Nechira, then once they went into Eretz Yisrael, then it became Asur Basar Nechira, and you had to do Shechita. Vachshav Shegalu, now that we went into Galut, Yachol Yachzur LaHetiran HaRishon, I would think maybe Shechita goes away. Maybe Shechita is only a din in Eretz Yisrael. It's not a din in Chutz La'aretz. So maybe once we were put into Galut, there was no longer a need to do Shechita. That's what the Kamash Malan is, La'olam Shochatin. Once we started the need for Shechita in Eretz Yisrael, that remains with us forever. It's the Kachshani La'olam Shochatin. So that's Rabbi Yosef's explanation of why it says Lolam Shochatim in the Mishnah. We had a machloket here between the Amoraim. First explanation is that it's Rabbi Shmuel. The Rabbi says that it's Rabbi Shmuel who's the author of our Mishnah, and he's saying Lolam Shochatim to tell us that the heter of Basar Tava remains even after we go into Galut. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef says the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva, and it's coming to teach us this special din that once Shechita goes into effect, it's never retracted. Then we always have to do Shechita in order to be Matir Basar Chulin. And that's what we're going to deal with tomorrow. We're going to deal with the Machlokas here between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. When it comes to Basar Tava, Chulin in the Midbar, we're getting into more into exactly what their Machlokas is. Okay, we'll stop over here.